talk about boundaries. So nobody is born with boundaries. Boy, I know that for a fact. My grandson loves to stick his fingers up my nose, in my mouth, and in my ears. Now that he's gotten older, he doesn't mind pulling my hair. He's just boundaryless, this kid is. And what we're discovering is after a few months, you're already beginning to teach this little guy what's a boundary. No, we don't stick our finger up Mimi's nose or in Mimi's mouth or in Mimi's ears, or we don't swat at Mimi if we get frustrated. And so this is the work that families are supposed to do. Our parents are supposed to teach us boundaries. Of course, that presumes that we as parents understand boundaries. And if we don't have a sense of that boundary, how are we really going to communicate that to our children? So some of the stuff we learn as we get older is, frankly, we're playing catch up. So if you were just looking at this in the most superficial way possible, boundaries are those things that that help us mitigate where I stop and you start. So right now I'm teaching little Christian where I stop and he starts. Just the most basic experience. My body is a boundary, and he doesn't stick his fingers and poke around on my face. These are the things that you and I are supposed to be learning, and we can't underestimate the fact that we may not have learned it. Let's look at the next slide, and let's talk about external boundaries. Those are the lines that demarcate the difference between you and me. And they are really helpful for us to define our personhood, where we stop and another person begins. You're very used to this conversation, right? We're used to having the conversation that says, I declared my boundary. I said I wasn't going to give him any more money. I just put my foot down and said I wasn't going to tolerate this tone of voice being used against me anymore. There are other kinds of boundaries other than just the ones we talk about where we're negotiating the space between you and me. That space being, am I or am I not allowed to eat off your plate in a restaurant, which I kind of do with my husband sometimes. Is that an appropriate boundary? Those are the kind of negotiable things we do in relationships. Here's some examples. You can have mental, physical, material, sexual, spiritual, and emotional boundaries. Let me take emotional for example. I learned at an early age how to feel your feelings, not my own. This was a safety mechanism for me in living with a family that wasn't healthy. It was very important for my physical safety to read the feelings of my father when he came through the door at night. I bet some of you have also had that experience. But when we've gotten really good at reading other people's feelings, we probably haven't been encouraged to feel our own feels, right? Again, back to baby Christian. Baby Christian has no limits with regards to expressing his feelings. We were out walking this week, and he was standing up on the rim of his stroller and screaming at the top of his lungs, and he was very emotive. And it was just plain old cute. He wasn't bothering anybody. I thought it was funny. But you know, if he's still screaming like this when he's in preschool, somebody's going to give him a conversation about that, right? We're going to have to learn to temper ourselves so that our boundaries aren't crossing over into someone else's. Boundaries, one of the great skill sets about boundaries is learning to express for clarity and accountability what our boundaries are. And that's a big point of contention when we've lived in family systems where our expression and clarity has meant absolutely nothing to other people. You know, a great example of a current discussion on external boundaries is the Harry Weinstein issue, where we are having lots of conversations about what he allegedly did or did not do in terms of abusing other women. And now the discussion's larger. We're beginning to say who else knew and who should have spoken up and why did people remain silent? This is a wonderful national forum on boundaries. It's giving us a chance as a culture to get more clear and discuss the accountability of how we want to relate to one another in terms of sexual boundaries, for example. Those are external boundaries. Here's an example of how boundaries look. A healthily boundaried person has an imaginary fence around them that is permeable. If you look on the far right side, if you lived in a gated, walled-off community where no one knows you or can get to know you and you don't get to know anyone else, that's not a boundary, that's a fortress. And it kind of goes against what we understand good health is, which is being able to have relationships with other people and having other people know us intimately and us know others intimately. If you look in the middle two examples, you can see that some people have no boundaries. There's no distinction between what you need and what I need, and we just give in to whatever anyone else's request is. And then there's the loose or porous boundary that is just you can kind of get in sometimes, but it's not clear. I think that's the thing that makes a boundary unhealthy, is it's not clear. Boundaries can be flexible, they can change, they should change depending on the people that you're relating to, but they need to be clear. And that's where we begin to have some interesting, I think, further discussion about boundaries. Before we get to that, let's just look at Toby Drew's comment right here. He says, when you're doing what's right for you, it's okay to say it once, simply, and then refuse to discuss anything further. This is a great application of, you get to decide for you what's your yes, what's your no, and what's your maybe, and you don't really have to convince anyone else of the rightness or the wrongness of the thing. It's just yours to do. You get to decide. I wonder if that feels really weird for some of you. It certainly did for me. All right, so internal boundaries are internal expressions of our core values that help direct our decision-making as it relates to our external boundaries. And these internal boundaries are the part that I think, as a pastor, are really exciting to explore. It's unfortunate, I think, that sometimes we never get around to explore them because we're so stuck on just focusing on the external ones. But I love this idea, and I think recovery ministry can be uniquely equipped to explore some of these things. Years ago, I wrote this book. We called it, Liz Swanson and I wrote it, we called it Bridges to Grace. And we chose that title because we were understanding that some people were really struggling to develop a bridge between their recovery work and their faith experiences. And it always seemed to me that one of the wonderful things we could do in a faith-based recovery ministry was explore some of these internal boundaries once we had enough safety and wellness to be able to do so. Because internal values require us to think deeply and profoundly about our core values, what we really believe. The 12 steps give us things to do, and I think also awesomely provide us an opportunity to see where what we've believed and what we've done might not connect well. We began to see perhaps where we have lost a clear sense of self, which is very common in families under stress. So what's happened in families that are struggling with a substance use disorder, whether it's the person who has the dependency issue is underfunctioning, or the family members who are overfunctioning, trying to keep their beloved safe or maybe even afloat, is that all of us end up losing a clear sense of self. We don't have time to think about it. We're ping-ponging from crisis to crisis, right? The other thing about internal boundaries is they don't require the same form of expression that we get in the habit of communicating about when we're talking about external boundaries. But I think they're extremely important in clarifying as we begin to make decisions about the kind of external boundary discussions we need to or want to have. I hope that makes sense. Let's go back to the Weinstein example for today. I think a lot of people wrapped up in this Hollywood experience of Weinstein, right? Harvey, I think is really his name, was that they are having to come to grips with their own core values. There's a lot of fussing and fighting about who said what and who didn't and who kept the secret and who didn't. And pretty much everybody kept the secret, right? And I think it's providing a lot of opportunities for people to get in touch with what they believe versus what they were willing to act on and do. I read a commentary by somebody, I'll never remember his name in the next 20 minutes, but he talked about how he was really wrestling with his own shame and guilt because he knew. And he knew that he was dealing with a bully. He knew that he was dealing with someone who violated other people's boundaries. And all he did, this is his words, not mine, all he did, quote, quote, was find another way to get good work done that he wanted to be successful at. As soon as he could sort of slip out of that system, he did. But he never raised his voice to discuss the system because it might have cost him something. He could have been blackballed. He could have been, could have had really personal implications for him. But now what he's wrestling with is the shame of feeling like he violated his core values. He's thinking about what if it had been his daughter who had been invited up to that hotel room. He's beginning to wonder, was the price too high to not speak up when he's beginning to hear the stories of the blame that he feels for further damage done because enough voices were not raised in protest. Here's the cool thing about thinking about internal boundaries, is it gives us the capacity to begin to decide where we need to shut up and where we need to put up. How close we want to dance with others in relationships, in large part because of what it is about our core values that teach us that we can stand tall. And at the end of the day, when we do our daily examine or do our personal moral inventory, that we don't feel less than because our doings and behavior has been inconsistent with our core value. We are, in essence, learning to respect ourselves. You know what this means is that we are beginning to have conversations that are not dependent on what somebody else does. So let's return to that very common thing where we say, I told him that I was drawing a boundary And I didn't want him to speak to me in that tone anymore. But guess what? He keeps talking to me like that. Okay, that's very common, right? We say, they just stepped all over my boundaries, right? That's an external boundary. What is it then that we do, utilizing our decent internal boundaries, to change how close we dance with the person who is treating us without respect or regard? What do we do differently? What changes do we make in our relationship with them? Look, this is very hard stuff. Sometimes it's talking about parent-child relationships or best friend relationships or marital relationships. This isn't easy to do, but it's essential if we're going to develop what I consider kind of a sturdy inner core, where we begin to live our, what does Mary Oliver say, one wild, precious life, and we invite people to join us who can respect the boundaries that matter to us and allow other relationships to have a little bit more distance. And yes, on occasion, we even have to build a fortress around them. When someone teaches us that they are going to undermine our capacity to live by our own core values. This isn't about changing other people. This is about doing the hard work of change ourselves. Might require changing jobs. It might require realigning our marital relationship. It might require changing how closely we interact with our own children who we just adore. But this is our work, and I think this is what's related to internal boundaries. Your boundaries at their core, the most precious part of doing good boundary work, protects the inner core of our identity and our right to choices. Setting boundaries is not about changing other people's behavior, but how many times have we tried to use it for that purpose? So when the person says, I set a boundary, I told him not to use that tone with me anymore. Was that setting a boundary? Or was that asking someone else to change so that she didn't have to change her boundary to be comfortable? In other words, who had the responsibility for making the boundary shift here? The difference could be, this might be setting a boundary. I find the tone you take with me to be uncomfortable and disconcerting. Can we talk about that? Repeat conversation. You know, I'm still finding that tone that you're taking with me to be uncomfortable and disconcerting. In fact, the way we interact is so uncomfortable, I feel like we need some outside support to help us get to a better place. Man, we've been talking about the way we interact for a really long time. We've gotten some good counseling. It doesn't seem to be making a difference. Got to be honest with you here. I am reevaluating how close in relationship I'm comfortable dancing with you based on who I am. See, that's changing the responsibility and the movement. You're inviting the other person to rumble with the relationship. But on the other hand, you're taking responsibility for you where you stand in the relationship. So that kind of goes to the second point. Setting boundaries is about learning how to express and follow through on the decisions we make as a result of a careful exploration of our core values as they relate to the current dilemma. Again, we're putting it back on us. You know, we have some wonderful videos from families on the website dealing with how they navigated their child's substance use disorder. And it's really uncanny how often it comes down to a parent saying, I couldn't live this way anymore, right before change happens. And I think that is a beautiful expression of awakening to a sense of self and their own boundaries of what they can take. It's scary as heck, because what you're acknowledging is that you may not actually be able to affect change in another person. But what I would suggest is, when we align ourselves in a healthy way with core values that express respect for self and others, I think we're actually creating an environment that is more likely to move towards health than less likely. Think about boundaries as being reflections of our decisions, not other people's actions. Boundaries are reflections of our decisions, not other people's actions. They're a reflection of our values, our preferences, and assessment of any given situation. And at any given time, we can be wrong, right? And then we can make an amends, we can redraw the boundary. We have choices. At lunch today, my husband and I were having a discussion about something, and he said, "Teresa, you get to make choices. You get to own your choice. You get to have a yes be yes and a no be no." And I thought that was really a fantastic piece of advice and telling of whatever we were talking about. Can't remember what it was. Something to do with our extended family situation, that he was reminded me of something that I was going to be teaching on later in the day, but that he still thought I needed a reminder that we get to choose the life we're living. I think that's one of the most beautiful lessons that recovery has given me, permission to own and take responsibility for the life I'm living. I love that, even though I'm lousy at it lots of times. Boundaries emerge as we learn to respect ourselves. So if we went back 7 or 8 slides, one of the things I think I said at one point was that when we're overly invested in how other people feel, we forget to learn and experience what we feel. Let me give you another baby example, just because I love to and I can. So my grandson is learning to eat. I mean, like real food. He's a year. And we're always presenting him with interesting options. And he is instantaneously clear. He either likes it or he doesn't like it. If he likes it, he makes this wonderful sound. He goes, mmm. He thinks it's yummy. If he doesn't like it, he throws it. It's just clear as day. So we were having the family for dinner Sunday night, and I made macaroni and cheese, and I was sure that he was going to like it. I mean, I just knew I was going to expose him to the wonderful world of mac and cheese. He hated it. He just kept rejecting my offers, and I kept offering it. I just kept thinking, well, if I put it on a different spoon, if I give it to him to hold, if I put one that has more cheese sauce on it. What I was doing was forgetting where I stopped and he started. He was clear. I wasn't. Finally, my daughter said to me, "I think we've tried this experiment enough. He doesn't like your macaroni and cheese, but I love it, and I'll eat 2 portions." I think she was just being sweet to me. But there is this sense of the beauty of when we learn to respect our own boundaries. By virtue of that, we are continuing to practice and give other people permission to have their own boundaries as well. I just love that about this boundary work. But as my example pointed out, you get completely unconscious and forget it on a regular basis. That's just the way we are. All right, I want to use my last 10 minutes to unpack a scripture that I hope I'm not misusing. I think it's okay. I think it's okay in context to use a scripture out of Galatians 6 to help support kind of the principles we've been talking about here. So let's look at this Galatians 6 passage in our last few minutes and just use it as I hold it very lightly as a guide. It just provides me some guidance that I appreciate. I return to it often and regularly. the question I usually ask of the text is, would you help me sort out what's mine to do? And remind me of what my tone and attitude should be. It has been helpful for me, along with other passages, but this maybe is my favorite one, when I regularly, daily, sometimes hourly, have to return to my own work as it relates to what's mine, what's yours, what's mine to do, when do I lean into a problem, when do I back out of a situation, and all the things that lie in between. So it's Galatians 6, 1 through 5. Starts out, brothers and sisters. So I am assuming that Paul is writing to Galatians, and he is presuming that everybody is kind of, sort of, working in the same playbook. So that means, for example, that I cannot use this passage of Scripture to define my relationship with somebody who is not a brother or a sister. It's disrespectful and boundaryless of me to take these verses and apply it to someone who is not a brother or a sister in Christ using my playbook. So right there, that's one of my natural limitations. This is the work done between brothers and sisters of faith. If a person is caught doing something wrong, you who are spiritual should restore someone like this with a spirit of gentleness. It's a super red flag for me, and believe me, my red flags in this area fly all the time, when I begin to get all whipped up about an issue that isn't my issue. When I begin to move away from gentleness to condescension, aggressive actions, when I'm moving away from that sort of gentle conversation where I'm not invested in how someone else is living out their life journey, but also willing to be present for a restorative talk should someone want it or need it, who fits the limited qualification of brother and sister here. So there's gentleness. Can I lead with gentleness? Some of that skill set, some of its temperament, it's always complicated for me personally. The next one, watch out for yourselves so you won't be tempted too. Oh man, this is getting to those internal boundaries. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. What's motivating me? What's going on internally? Does this feel kind of old, like something that's bigger than just the current situation I'm in? Does this person I'm in a conversation with remind me of somebody that I have an unresolved issue with in my past? I better watch myself, because I don't need to complicate the situation by moving outside of what's mine to do, by beginning to be tempted to poach your boundaries in order for you to make me feel better about me. So that's a pretty big deal. I love this one. It says, carry each other's burdens, and so you will fulfill the law of Christ. I could spend 3 hours on this sentence, but let me try to be quick about it. There are some burdens that are too big for one person to carry. So I would suggest to you that it is not codependent to help carry burdens. You will or have already seen some of the videos that address James's recovery experience and Juanita and Dale's experience with James's recovery. I love their story. They did a really great job of eventually sorting through who was what to carry. When they finally got to the point where they had to give James choices, they also did not ask James to figure out how to go to treatment. You know, like, hey, if you're really incentivized, you'll figure this treatment stuff out on your own. No, a substance use disordered person in the midst of active addiction needs people to carry some of their burdens. This is tricky. requires a whole village to figure it out, and sometimes village even has to change its mind. But there are some burdens that are meant to be borne. And I think Barbara's question earlier about serving, I think there is some sacrifice involved in serving at-risk communities. There is some life laying down. It's just the motivation behind it. If anyone thinks they're important when they aren't, they're fooling themselves. So I love that because it reminds me that I'm not the only one to solve the problem. I'm the firstborn only daughter in a family system that wanted me to be the hero until the day it didn't, and then it turned me into a scapegoat, which both are really unpleasant roles. But the thing of it is the bad habit I learned is that I was important in ways that were not healthy. I was being taught that children sometimes bore the load of adults, and that was not true. It was wrong. It wasn't really helpful, and I wasn't really being important. What I was living in a very sick system, and it was hurting all of us. Each person should test their own work and be happy with doing a good job and not compare themselves with others. So in this big community of faith that we work on being responsible to versus responsible for, all of us are helping to carry a burden, but none of us are Jesus having to carry all of the burden. Just not ours to do. Again, we continue to flash back on this thing of the daily examine, a really good 10th step where we're asking ourselves the question, is this really mine to do? And then this final little sentence sort of closes it out for us. Each person will have to carry their own load. If we did an analysis of these words in the original text, I think we could make an argument for burden being like a really heavy steamer trunk that really you can't pick up if you don't have a team. In our family, we like to joke and say that that's the how many shoes my daughter-in-law likes to take on vacation because she's a fashion maven. But this thing down here with each person having to carry their own load, that's a reasonable backpack, a reasonable expectation of what it means if you're 29 to be an adult, maybe pay for your own cell phone, right? Maybe be working towards supporting yourself, depending on where you are, 6 months out of recovery. Maybe you're working toward it. 7 years out of recovery, probably you're able to support yourself now. I think these verses allow us both the accountability, the consciousness, and the flexibility to take each situation as it comes, not by live by a bunch of rules.